AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha. Always streaming on the Civic Media app.
This is CBS News on the Hour, sponsored by Liberty Mutual Insurance.
I'm Monica Ricks in New York. Nearly a year into its war with Russia, President Biden says the U.S. is sending tanks to Ukraine.
The Abrams tanks are the most capable tanks in the world. They're also extremely complex to operate and maintain. So we're also giving Ukraine the parts and equipment necessary to effectively sustain these tanks on the battlefield.
But it's not exactly a simple solution.
I'm Stephen Portnoy. The move is a reversal. The Pentagon previously argued that M1 Abrams tanks would be too difficult for the Ukrainians to operate and maintain. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby notes the Abrams tanks run on jet fuel.
We've got to make sure that that pipeline, literally and figuratively, is available to Ukraine.
But Kirby says when the tanks and other armored vehicles from the U.S. and its European allies are in place, they'll make a difference.
Armored vehicles are important. You know, you don't go after a crocodile with a cornstalk.
In Virginia, lawyers say there were warning signs ahead of a school shooting there.
Lawyer Diane Toscano says concerned teachers and employees warned administrators at Richneck Elementary School in Newport News, Virginia, three times that a six-year-old boy had a gun and was threatening other students in the hours before he shot and wounded his first grade teacher.
This should have never happened. It was preventable. And thank God Abby is alive.
The lawyer represents 25-year-old Abigail Swarner, who plans to sue the school district. Jim Crisula, CBS News.
The White House is defending the discovery of classified documents at President Biden's former home and office. White House National Security Spokesman John Kirby says it was reported immediately.
If you do it inadvertently or you do it and you realize, you know, you don't have it secured in a locked bag, or, you know, you self-report, which is exactly what the president did.
Former Vice President Mike Pence did the same this week. The feds are looking into Snapchat.
Authorities are said to be looking into instances where Snapchat users arrange drug sales. The Justice Department reportedly is focusing on sales of fentanyl-laced pills that led to poisoning and, in some cases, death. Snapchat says it's made significant improvements to detect and remove drug dealers from its platform.
CBS's Steve Futterman. Arkansas wants to ban drag shows. Here's CBS's Allison Keyes.
The legislation bans drag shows from taking place on public property and puts them in the same classification as adult-oriented businesses, such as adult live entertainment and adult video stores. The bill's main sponsor, Republican Senator Gary Stubblefield, says,
to me, this is putting our children in situations that really is a violation of their personal boundaries.
Critics say it discriminates against the LGBTQ community, but is so broad it could apply to people in their own homes. This is CBS News.
Nobody should have to pay for one-size-fits-all insurance coverage. Liberty Mutual customizes your car and home insurance, so you only pay for what you need. Liberty Mutual.
The Shaw 101 FM, your fix for progressive talk. From Big Bend to Menominee Falls. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
I'm Terry Bell. Here's what you need to know. Governor Evers wants $2 billion in new spending for public schools and recruiting new teachers in Wisconsin.
Doing what's best for our kids has always been what's best for our state, and today we can afford to do more.
Evers gave his fifth State of the State speech last night, calling for spending increases to fight mental illness and PFAS contamination. He also wants more investment in Wisconsin's job market. Republicans who control the legislature say most of Evers' proposals won't get passed. TikTok is now banned on all University of Wisconsin system devices. Security experts say the popular social media app is risky for privacy and safety reasons. In sports, the Bucks host Denver tonight. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
It's a new year, and because we're excited about our new and still growing Civic Media network of radio stations, it's time to do something really big. How does $1 million advertising giveaway sound to you? Our celebration is your chance to work with Civic Media's amazing sales team, creating a radio advertising campaign promoting your business for free. Save the date. The $1 million advertising giveaway is only happening on Thursday, January 26th. Full details on our website, civicmedia.us/million.
Charged, never convicted. The Devil's Advocates.
Jim Santel for just a few more minutes. As you point out, this is a civil trial, not a criminal trial. You think that the Trump org will end up with the death penalty under New York law?
Letitia James, she's doing the civil case, right? This is a criminal matter.
Oh, it is. So I misunderstood.
It is, yes.
Normally, so, I leave the being wrong to Dom.
Right?
Listen Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m. for the Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Hey there, fellow working class heroes. I'm Rick Smith, host of The Rick Smith Show. And we are now on the air in Waukesha. Live weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw. Turn on, tune in, and help us rebuild the American dream. Check out our website at TheRickSmithShow.com. The Rick Smith Show, where working people come to talk. Weeknights, 8 to 10 p.m. right here on WAUK 540 AM, 101 FM, The Shaw.
WAUK 540 AM, Franklin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. The Shaw 101 FM, New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com. Warning, you are about to listen to the greatest radio show ever. And due to contractual obligations and to shield our airwaves and corporate licensees from any semblance of liability, responsibility, and gullibility, we must tell you the views represented on this show are not necessarily those of this station or its management. This radio show contains differing points of view on current political topics, and due to the nature of its contents, it should be heard by everyone. Thank you for listening. Three, two, one. Now live from the Devil Radio Studios in Madison, Wisconsin, where the political party is just beginning. Welcome to the Devil's Advocate Show. Friends proving it's never personal, only politics.
Please allow me to introduce myself.
Here is your host, Mike Crute.
Welcome to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. It is a whopper of a Wednesday edition, Dom. Not only do we celebrate the Tony Eber State of the State hangover, but we got a fine show today. We got a couple of big guests. One coming soon, he is former U.S. Attorney James Santel. And we welcome back Brendan Fisher, Deputy Executive Director. It's documented. Brendan, thanks, man. Thanks for joining us.
Right. Yeah, thank you for having me.
You're going to make it a big show for us, Brendan. The topic today, George Santos. This fine newly elected congressman from New York apparently has got some crazy campaign finance things on the record. And is it my understanding that he has restated with the FEC the actual loans given to his campaign? Tell me about the restatement. What did he restate, Brendan?
Yeah. Well, so George Santos has a long list of lies, and his campaign finance reports are a complete mess. But the big question is, where did Santos's money come from? So if you back up a little bit, when he ran for office in 2020, he claimed that he made nothing, no income in the entire year of 2020, earned $55,000 in salary in 2019. Then all of a sudden, when he runs for office last year, his personal wealth has just skyrocketed. This company that he created after beginning to run for office, it's called the Volcker Organization, reportedly paid him $1.75 million in 2021 and another $1.75 million in 2022. And that income is supposedly the source of over $700,000 that Santos put into his campaign. He claimed that he put over $700,000 in personal funds into his campaign. But it's really questionable whether Santos, legitimately earned that money or whether it came from some other source. And there's all sorts of theories about where that money came from. But what happened yesterday, the latest chapter in this saga is when Santos discloses in his campaign finance filings that he made these loans, he also has to check a box declaring that these were the personal loans of the candidate. And in a slew of amendments filed last night, Santos unchecked that box for about $625,000 of his claimed personal loans. So it's hard to know exactly what's going on here. It doesn't make a whole lot of sense. As with all things Santos, you know, it's kind of hard to tell where, you know, the idiocy ends and the, you know, intentional obfuscation begins. You know, but it's the latest chapter in this bizarre saga.
Brendan, is it illegal for a candidate to self-fund a federal campaign? We know that U.S. Senator Ron Johnson from the great state of Wisconsin, where we live, well, he put a lot of money behind his prior campaign, $9, $10 million the first time he got elected, my understanding. Well, clearly there's some allowable amount that you can loan to your campaign or give to your campaign. But what if you claimed you gave the money to your campaign, but let's just say it came from a Ponzi scheme or perhaps a Russian oligarch? Would that be problematic?
Yes, and I think you're hitting the nail on the head. It's lawful for a candidate to put as much of their own money into their campaign. They can also take out a bank loan and put that money into their campaign, you know, provided they provide details about that bank loan. What you can't do is claim you're putting your own money into the campaign, but in reality, take those funds from some other secret, undisclosed source, such as a Russian oligarch. You know, that is very, very illegal. It's a violation of a number of different campaign finance laws, and very possibly, you know, could bring criminal liability.
Get a little raise.
Right. And there were a number of reports that were amended last night, not super consistent with what those amendments look like, not even always consistent about which boxes are being checked on which report. You know, but the reason that box is on the FEC report is because, you know, the candidate has to disclose that they put their money into the campaign. Or they have to disclose that the source of the funds was them, and that's what Santos did. You know, it's right there on the receipts. The $500,000 came from George Santos, described as a loan from the candidate. The only reason that a loan from the candidate would not have that personal funds of the candidate box checked is if the money came from a bank loan. But then you have to separately report that, and that's not what Santos did. He did not separately report anything about an underlying bank loan. So, you know, it's hard to tell whether Santos or maybe his treasurer are trying to, you know, cover their butts here and, you know, provide some kind of correction that they hope is going to absolve them of some degree of liability in connection with a civil or criminal investigation. It also could just be that they're very sloppy. Everything is a complete mess. They're checking some boxes, unchecking other boxes. But ultimately the question is still, you know, where did the money come from? Where did the $700,000 that, you know, George Santos claims to have put into his campaign using personal funds actually come from, given that the guy has been evicted multiple times, given that he has this long string of personal debts and, you know, has little record of ever holding down a serious job? Yeah, I mean, there could be some gray areas. I mean, the general rule is that if you take out a bank loan, you know, in connection with your campaign, then the bank loan should be disclosed on your campaign finance reports. Well, again, we don't know, but one possible explanation is that any expenditure over $200 has to have a receipt. So you've got to have a paper trail to show where the money was going if it's over $200. And lo and behold, Santos, for whatever reason, you know, has this series of $199.99 expenditures. You don't see this on any other campaign finance report. It's an extremely odd number to come up with. And some of these payments were for, you know, like a hotel stay at the W in Miami, where the cheapest room is $700 per night. So I don't see how you come up with $199.99 for a hotel stay at the W in Miami.
And the fact that they're all $199.99, the mathematical implausibility of that is infinity, I would suspect. Brendan, how well trained were you chasing Scott Walker here in the state of Wisconsin? And I would want you to look back for just a minute. The guy ran for president, but he didn't run for president. He had this 527, I think, is what he used as his vehicle for a shadow campaign. And he raised like $40 million, and he spent like $42 million. And then he washed out quick, you know, die quick. And he did as a campaign. But wasn't that all legal in the interim? That's not how you're supposed to run a campaign. If you're running for something, you're supposed to declare for something. And we saw the early examples of Scott Walker. Of course, it was just corruption when he was doing it on the state level. But even on the federal level, wasn't Scott Walker sort of one of the early achievers in campaign finance corruption?
Yeah, well, I mean, definitely on the state level, you know, Scott Walker is a standout when it comes to political corruption and, you know, dark money shenanigans, you know, the illegal and secret money that came in to support his 2012 recall from the out-of-state mining company that wanted the mining bill pushed through the legislature, and the lead paint manufacturer that was facing lawsuits from lead poisoned families. You know, that's on another level. But yeah, Scott Walker was one of the politicians who, you know, helped pioneer ways to run for president using secret funds while pretending you're not running for president.
Yeah, but he never was charged with a crime. He's never been convicted. The FEC is feckless. I mean, I'm not trying to undermine the fine work you do as a watchdog, but Brendan, if there's no teeth behind the actual regulatory agencies, what's the crime of doing the crime?
Sure. Well, I will note, the FEC did find that Scott Walker violated the law. It's just that by the time they got around to finding that he violated the law, the statute of limitations had expired. But Santos's violations seem to be on another level. The FEC has civil authority, but what Santos, you know, appears to have been involved with, you know, has kicked over to the criminal level, knowing and willful campaign finance violations, like hiding the source of $700,000 in purported personal loan, for example, you know, is potentially criminal. And then you don't need to have the feckless FEC involved. Then it's the DOJ, Department of Justice.
Brendan Fisher, Deputy Executive Director. It's documented. Brendan, thank you so much for joining us today.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Thanks, Brendan.
We'll be right back. More Devils.
What, I thought we were in the trust tree in the nest, are we not?
And for today's STEM tip. Okay, you know recycling is important. No one wants plastic in the ocean. Here's a cool way to repurpose a plastic bottle. Build an awesome terrarium. Cut a large plastic bottle in half and fill the base with sand, pebbles, potting soil, and your favorite plant. I chose an African violet. Put the top of the bottle over your base and place it in the sun. Your plant will grow sealed in its own ecosystem. Fun, right? Learn more at SheCanSTEM. A message from the Ad Council.
The Devil's Advocates Radio Show.
Hey, Joe.
What do you got for us today?
In reference to Lindsey Graham, I was amazed at his comments where he said if Trump is indicted, there will be riots in the streets. Lindsey Graham was a JAG officer, and in order to be a JAG officer, you have to pass the bar. Was a JAG officer.
I'm sorry, he's a JAG officer? I didn't quite understand that.
Yeah, to see a lawyer head for the rat hole instead of acting like a person with a backbone. Wow, what a profile and courage, huh?
Monday through Friday from 4 to 6 p.m.,
plenty of people start something great in their 40s and 50s. Getting your retirement savings on track is no different. Go to aceyourretirement.org and in 3 minutes you'll get personalized tips to help boost your retirement savings. That's aceyourretirement.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Missed your favorite show live on air? It's easy to find what you enjoy wherever you listen to podcasts, including Spotify, Apple, and Google Podcasts. And we're always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw.
Chance for snow tonight. Otherwise, cloudy skies expected.
Lows level off around 27.
Winds out of the northwest, 5 to 10 miles an hour.
Snow likely tomorrow.
High temperatures reach up to 30.
Overcast skies.
Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow night.
Lows around 15.
1 to 2 inches of snow tonight through Friday.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Eric Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
When they go low, we get high. The Devil's Advocates.
And we are back from the 420 break. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. You can join us on the lines this segment at 844-967-2789. Make it quick, though. James Santel, former U.S. attorney, our friend, going to join us at the bottom of the hour.
Can't wait, Tom. Got a couple of quick backyard fact checks. Number one, the wanker. Do you see what this idiot said? I think we mentioned it earlier. But the wanker made a statement. I'd like to make sure I get it accurate for the audience because
yes,
I don't want to get facts checked.
No, of course not.
Per the PolitiFact Wisconsin, Scott Walker made this statement. I quote directly from the former gubernator. Let's be clear. Drag shows are strip shows. And PolitiFact, unfortunately, found it necessary to rate this statement. They called it false. I'd call it pants on frickin' fire, you moron wanker. Come on, man. A little bit from this. In recent years, drag shows have become the target for conservatives and wankers. For instance, drag show story hours have drawn protesters and ire on conservative talk shows. And drag performers have been accused of grooming children to be assaulted. In Wisconsin, that rhetoric recently focused on a drag show organized by Madison East High School that was postponed because of backlash and concerns about the safety of the performers and the attendees. In a January 5th tweet, Scott Walker took aim at the event, sharing a photo of the school's January newsletter, which he said showed, the show was family friendly and meant to celebrate affirm and support EHS students and staff in our LGBTQIA+, as well as our larger school community. The wanker tweeted, let's be clear, drag shows are strip shows, they're wrong, and they're particularly wrong at school, and they're definitely not family friendly. So I'll spare you the actual breaking down of the wanker's stupid statement. I mean, it's false. It's pants on fire false. I mean, a drag show is not a strip show. They don't get naked, wanker. That's the difference.
Well, you know, there is a big difference. And I would just say, it can be like burlesque, right? You know, taking some things off, swirling it around, and throwing it to the crowd. But if you're a drag queen, you probably have, you know, fake breasts of some sort, and there's some really high quality stuff out there. But you know, they're strapped in, tied in, they're made to look real, right? And you might be, you know, tucking things certain ways that if you were certainly naked, they may not, you know, stay so well. You know, depends on how the adhesives are working that day. So, it's not naked. You're not going to the strip club, Scott Walker. But it just goes to show you how ignorant. Republican megas like Scott Walker are. I mean, go to a drag show sometime. It's a blast. They have one every year here on Brady Street in Milwaukee at 9 o'clock at night on the West Stage. It's packed. People love it. When they go and see it, they are entertained because it's entertaining.
Dominic, when asked Wanker about his tweet, he defended his position. He's out there defending it. Now, listen to this false characterization. In my opinion,
yeah.
If people are taking off clothing or play music or are given dollar bills by members of the audience, that is a strip show, regardless of gender. What about the guy that plays the guitar on the...
Right, man, it's called tipping, Walker, something that you apparently never do.
Well, if he tipped the waitress, she might start taking off pieces of her clothing. And Toadette would never go for that. Mother would not go for that. They claim here at PolitiFact, Walker is painting a distorted picture of what a drag show actually is. According to Merriam-Webster, pretty bad when you got to go to Merriam-Webster to define a drag show. Drag is entertainment in which performers caricature or challenge gender stereotypes, as by dressing in clothing that is stereotypical of another gender, or by using exaggerated gender mannerisms, or by combining elements of the stereotypical male and female dress, and often wear elaborate or outrageous costumes.
Right.
But what it doesn't say is they strip it off and get naked, you moron, wanker.
Like Bugs Bunny. You know what I mean? I mean, accentuated. The long eyelashes and the curvaceous body. I mean, that's the point. It is to be extreme, and it is to entertain. And tipping is not a crime, Scott Walker.
Dominic, I've got another quick fact check. Did liberal high court candidate Janet Protasiewicz violate the judicial code of conduct? In separate interviews and panel discussions, liberal Wisconsin Supreme Court candidate Janet Protasiewicz has called the state's legislative maps rigged and said the U.S. Supreme Court decision overturning Roe v. Wade was wrongly decided. Conservatives from the Republican Party of Wisconsin, what a fine group. I hear they're in disarray to a prominent radio host. Wonder what righty whitey's out calling this one. Have said that Protasiewicz's embrace of the stance violates Wisconsin's Code of Judicial Conduct because if she's elected, she could help decide cases challenging the state's maps and Wisconsin's near-complete abortion ban. Some are calling for the Wisconsin Judicial Commission looking into the matter, noting that the provision in Judicial Code bars candidates from making pledges, promises, or commitments regarding issues, controversies, or cases they're likely to come before them. Stopping short of alleging any violations, conservative challenger and all-around jacknut Justice Dan Kelly said in a PBS Wisconsin interview that importing one's personal preferences or politics into the high court is poison to the body's work. You know, nice of you to say, but you served on that court. And you were the most partisan hack of all.
And isn't that exactly what you justified in your letter to Scott Walker to put you on the court with your personal beliefs?
I think it is, Dom. Anyways, there were a couple quotes from Protasiewicz. Effectively, she defends herself. I think it's a very defendable position. Typically, you don't see the judges doing this, judicial candidates. But I can tell you, man, if she gets elected, all bets are off. You can't even make them recuse. They write their own rules. They're the highest court in the state of Wisconsin. Just ask Gableman. Remember the ethics violation that helped him get elected to the court? What was his punishment? Oh, yeah, bub kiss. Because he got to rule on himself. Come back, James Santel, former U.S. attorney. He's a friend of ours. It's a fine show. You're listening right now.
I state your name.
I state your name.
Wanker.
Wasn't true. It was a Scott Walker.
A progressive voice from Beaver Dam to Kenosha. WAUK 540 AM. Always streaming at waukradio.com.
CBS News Brief. President Biden says the U.S. plans to send big military tanks to help Ukraine defend itself against Russia soon.
That's what this is about. Helping Ukraine defend and protect Ukrainian land. It is not an offensive threat to Russia. There is no offensive threat to Russia.
People are now cleaning up in Texas, where at least 14 tornadoes have caused widespread damage. CBS's Janet Shamlian is there.
Schools in this community, Deer Park, will be closed today. That's a function of the power outages and the road closures here. And the Weather Service will be on the ground looking at the damage to determine the strength of the tornado.
The teacher who was shot by a six-year-old student in Newport News, Virginia, plans to sue the school district. Attorney Diane Toscano.
The road to full recovery will be long. And as her physical condition improves, the psychological wounds cut deeply and remain fresh.
CBS News Brief. I'm Monica Ricks.
WAUK 540 AM. New Berlin's choice for news talk radio. Streaming 24/7 at waukradio.com.
For Civic Media, I'm Jane Matner with your headlines. The question of what constitutes as a missing address on an absentee ballot might soon have an answer. State law doesn't define what a complete address is. The Wisconsin Elections Commission hasn't said what an incomplete address is, but has issued guidance saying that an address must have three things: a street number, street name, and municipality. A League of Women Voters asking a judge to clarify what a missing address is to clear up confusion for local election clerks. Republicans want the case thrown out on a technicality. A Dane County Circuit judge expected to issue a written ruling within a month. Calls to Wisconsin's suicide and crisis lifeline skyrocketing since the hotline switched to a simpler 988 number. WPR reporting between August and December of last year, the crisis lifeline got nearly 30,000 calls, a 66% jump in volume compared to the same time period in 2021. You're listening to The Shaw, 101 FM, WAUK 540 AM.
Tom has been a teacher for over 40 years. One day, I think one of the students had asked the question and he didn't remember the answer. And I also noticed that he was letting his class out earlier than they were supposed to let out. I was really starting to worry.
Levi and I talked about how it would change our lives, but he was there beside me.
When something feels different, it could be Alzheimer's. Now is the time to talk. Visit alz.org/ourstories to learn more. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Up North News Radio is Wisconsin's new choice for progressive talk about important state issues, from the team that brings you the news through social media, newsletters, and here on the radio. I'm Pat Kreitlow. Join me weekday mornings from 6 to 8 a.m.
Hump Day equals Hump Day. Greg Bock Day.
It is. It is. Put that on your tombstone.
Oh, yeah.
Listen Monday through Friday from 11 a.m. to 2 p.m. for As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry.
Yes, you've just convinced me towards a burial service now. That's it.
Was it cremation before? Was that your go-to?
Viking funeral?
Listen to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry right here on The Shaw, 101 FM and WAUK 540 AM.
27% of the American workforce, and some even say 30%, were in unions who had representation and who clearly did not have to worry about whether or not they were going to get their fair share. But I'm definitely going to fight for people who get the short end of the stick in this society only because they don't have representation. That's who I am.
Check out the Earl Ingram Show every day from 8 a.m. to 11 a.m. only on WAUK 540 AM 101 FM, The Shaw.
Save the $2 on tomorrow's paper. Listen to the Devil's Advocates today.
Welcome back to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show, the whopper of a Wednesday edition. We got another fine guest. He returns, host of Morning Cannolis, right here on the Civic Media Network. Also, a former U.S. attorney, some other insignificant, important jobs he used to have. He's James Santelli. He's our good buddy, Jim. Welcome back.
Hey, Jim.
Mike, I'm good to be with you once again on this great Wednesday.
Thanks.
Jim, I've talked to you since you last appeared on the show, so I'm a little confused. Timeline-wise, I hope I'm not being repetitive for the sake of the audience, but Fannie Willis, Tuesday, I believe yesterday, January 24th, sort of a day I've been circling on my calendar, because the prior grand jury in Fulton County was supposed to go before the hearing, or at least the report findings, and they had asked, and now the district attorney, my understanding, had asked the judge, don't release the documents yet, because it could affect the legal status of several future defendants. Did you take heart in the statements made by the Fulton County DA?
Yes, there were at least a couple of things that Ms. Willis said that I think are worthy of note, and you've got one of them. That is, she made reference to future defendants, which is an interesting phrase, right? Because we don't have any present defendants yet, but she's plainly contemplating. She probably has some document on her desk right now that she's going to present to the indicting grand jury, which is how they do it in Georgia. And she's thinking not only about her need to disclose to them discovery, but perhaps some future defendants as well. So it underscores, number one, that her net is much broader than just Donald Trump, right? We've known that because she's talked to Brian Kemp, the governor. She's talked to Lindsey Graham, many other people, about 70 people in front of this reviewing grand jury. So her net is very broad, and she plainly has people on a list, future defendants. She also says that she's making a decision. Second big linguistic thing comes out of the hearing. She says, we're going to make some decisions imminently. Decisions are imminent. Now, I think we can go to our dictionaries, our thesauruses, and find out other words for that. But that means pretty soon. And so my guess is that maybe we should talk again as soon as next week, maybe earlier rather than later, because imminent strikes me as within weeks, maybe even days.
So imminent decisions
from again
could also mean a no. It could be yes. I'm hoping yes. Sounds like yes.
Right.
But a decision
right.
of no could be imminent, and it could be not the one that we want. But all indications that I'm reading, and get me your opinion, counselor, are that something's coming.
I think that's right. And you're absolutely right that she is holding her cards closely, and she's not making that decision. She wouldn't say, I'm announcing that I'm going to be doing something. Highly unlikely. I would be stunned. I owe you all lunch if indeed she comes back next week and says, you know what, I've looked at all this, nothing to see here. I've conducted an eight-month, I'm paneled this grand jury last September, and I've gone down the road, and I've exhausted everything, nothing here. So I think that's right. Something is coming. The question is, the imminence and future defendants, is she going to do this in sort of two tranches? Is she going to indict some people, as we've seen in other settings initially? Is she going to indict, for example, some of the folks who made pilgrimages there? And for example, Rudy Giuliani, who had this hearing in front of some legislative group and said, yes, we've got fraud here. You indict a first group and then see what happens there. And then you go after the big fish, which in this case probably would be Donald Trump. And that's why, and again, this word future defendants suggests to me that there might be a two-tiered approach on this. Just fine to do it that way. Prolongs things a bit, but also strategically wise. Add one more thing. Although the journalists out there, including you, will not be happy to hear this, I join her in her concern about not producing that document now. It's nice to know. It would give us more to chat about. I'd be on your show for next 4 or 5 hours, right, if we got that document. The problem is compromising the investigation itself, and that's the thing that she's focusing on even more than public notoriety about what she's doing. That will come. Right now, she's got to make that decision and make certain her integrity is preserved with respect to that prosecution that is forthcoming.
The devil's advocate, he's Jim Santel. He's our fine legal counsel, at least for, you know, advising on the radio purposes. Jim, do you agree with the Trump legal team in their assessment, the fact that since he was not interviewed in regards to the Fulton County, therefore he's fully vindicated and exonerated, Jim?
Didn't subpoena him, right? He never called, and all these other people were, so they plainly are not interested in just the opposite. The fact that he wasn't called, and I will say that often in front of the federal grand juries, we will sometimes, in appropriate circumstances, not obliged to do it, we will sometimes reach out to a target of the investigation, a target meaning somebody who's probably going to be in the top of the list of defendants on the indictment. We will sometimes say, if you would like to come in and talk to the grand jury and tell them your side, you can do that. You're not obliged to do that. You can do that from time to time. The fact that you don't do that does not mean that you are got out of jail free pass. Probably just the opposite, that she has got enough information before that grand jury, documents, again, obviously we've got the call, other things, that she doesn't need to do that. And if anything, the tea leaves should be read to suggest that Donald Trump and his legal team should be very, very concerned about imminent charges. Just the opposite.
can't wait till it's Fannie Willis Day up in here. Mm-hmm. Folks, you are listening to the Devil's Advocates Radio Show. That's Jim Santel. He's the host of Morning Cannolis every Saturday right here on the Civic Media Network, 9 to 11 a.m. Jim, appreciate when you come on our little show.
Yep.
Let me ask you about the paperwork crimes of former President Trump, current President Biden, and now VP Pence.
He wants to be in there too.
Right, Jim, was he feeling classified document envy? Why did Pence throw himself under the bus?
Right. And especially after having said recently he was condemning the president for his documents. Now it turns out in Indiana, in our home, we've got a few. And it does make you wonder if other former vice presidents and former presidents are out there and also looking in their attics and basements right now and saying, gee, what did I take? 4 years ago, we've got a group of obviously ex-executives who are out there, but we don't know about that, but it could be more. It is fascinating intellectually. It is problematic, obviously, in a legal matter that all of these folks and perhaps others have these documents in their hands. The question comes down once again to intent. As we have talked in this show multiple times, it's all about intent. If you have staff that packed some things in with other non-classified documents, if mistakes were made, that's negligence. That's hugely sloppy. That is in violation of the law, but it's probably not a crime because you didn't have the intent to do it. The difference, once again, as we have discussed, is with Donald Trump, told by NARA, asked by the lawyers, asked by everyone to return these documents, grand jury subpoena, still we don't get everything back. A search warrant is conducted, arguably still not everything back. That tends to show that you are purposely keeping things back, and that's when you are in the area of intent. The difficulty, of course, is now we've got everybody across the board with these things. It is something of a public consumption problem for Merrick Garland, who ultimately has to make some decisions here. Still, he's got to be guided by the law. Probably Joe Biden and Mike Pence, no intent here. Perhaps a letter telling them can't be doing this, inappropriate, maybe some other remedies there. But the intent probably with Donald Trump, if you've got people out there saying, yes, I saw him take these. He knew what he had. He took them with him on January 20th, and he's been looking at them in Mar-a-Lago. He's been running around with them. That's a different story than finding them, whether it's in Indiana or in Delaware, in a box that you did not know you had.
Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney. Jim, a couple more seditious conspiracy convictions, man. So this, you know, this continues on, and we're now seeing more and more people, and this is a fairly rare charge and a very even more rare conviction. Jim, I want to get your opinion on where you think this is going, and what does this mean for those who have yet to come to trial?
Right. Big news. And I think the media is probably covering this. We've got, obviously, a while back, we've got Stuart Rhodes and the first tranche of Oath Keepers convicted for seditious conspiracy. In non-legal terms, that means you meant to overthrow the government. That's a big one. There's no doubt about it. We've got the Proud Boys, Enrique Terrio, who's right now on trial, doing some jury selection there as well. That will go ahead. And now we've got, as of yesterday or the day before, additional Oath Keepers also convicted of seditious conspiracy. As you said, Dom, this is not an easy charge. We've had history in this country where it's tried to use it unsuccessfully. You've got, and here's the point, you've got juries now pulled in off the street. I mean that in a positive way. There are people who are looking at this independently, presumably without huge bias, and saying, you know what? Contrary to those people who said that January 6th was simply visitors or it was a political discourse, as the Republican Party said, right. No, we've got independent people looking at this and saying, these folks, and not just one, not just two, I think we're now up, well approaching 10, if not more, and we'll be on that. These people intended to overthrow your government violently, and that's what January 6th is about. It's important for the convictions, it's important the sentences they get, but also for the messages that America should be taking from that, is you now have an independent, nonpartisan jury saying, we came close. We had a conspiracy to accomplish the overthrow of the United States of America. That's what January 6th, and that's the messaging coming out of these verdicts.
Rolling Stone is reporting Ellie Alexander apparently had some text messages going back with all sorts of people. And one of them jumps out at me, Jim, and it's with a guy named Joe Flynn. And Joe Flynn, I didn't realize this until I saw this in the Rolling Stone article, is General Mike Flynn's brother. Not to be confused with Charles Flynn, who was, what, on the phone at the Pentagon when the Army lied about his part being a part of that phone call. The Army lied three times, admitted it, then never came back and explained themselves. So the Flynn brothers are what? Mike Flynn, you know, working with the Russians or, you know, talking to the Russians and eventually getting fired as national security advisor. We got Joe Flynn, his brother, also texting with Ellie Alexander. And Charles, his involvement has never been explained. The Pentagon's lack of action, to my opinion, never been explained. But what is... I guess my question, Jim, it seems like to me that there's lots of tentacles to this, and it doesn't, I don't know if it's all getting run down.
Right. That's the great challenge on this. From time to time, I think about, for example, a bank robbery, right? It is a very, it's horrific. It's a violent event, and do not mean to minimize the significance of it, but it's discreet, right? You've got an event that happens over the course of several minutes, identify who does it. This begins again long before probably the election and continues arguably to this day, right? If you've got a conspiracy to keep quiet and do those other things that are still happening out there. That's the challenge, frankly, that the special counsel has to try to run all this down. Huge resources by the FBI and others to try to track all of these tendrils down. And then the big issue that he will have before he makes a recommendation to the attorney general about what to do here is, what do you indict? What don't you indict? Or once again, you do it in tranches. You identify a discrete group over here and you identify their subset of the conspiracy and then move on to another indictment down the road. There is a lot. And I think the greatest challenge that Jack Smith and others there at Department of Justice have is not so much whether to indict, it's how to indict. How do you get your head around all this? And frankly, what kinds of things do you choose? Because there's so much you choose to put on the secondary list and not indict, just because you need to focus on the big stuff, what Mike would call the non-paper crimes, right? The big stuff that is really out there. That's what he's got to focus on. That's not an easy intellectual thing to do. And reasonable people can make different judgment calls about that. But he's up for the task. And that's the challenge of going forward here.
Jim, first of all, you got a little more time for us?
Absolutely. All of the time in the world for you, too. Absolutely.
House committees, now Republican-controlled House committees, have warned the DOJ they're coming investigating the investigators. And the DOJ said effectively, on most topics, pound sand. Jim, is that the appropriate answer?
Maybe it's my expression is take a flying leap is the one that I often use. And the answer is yes. Congress has no right under any statute to do anything like getting inside criminal investigations. It's probably arguably a violation of not only separation of powers, but all sorts of rights of defendants and investigators. It's craziness. And the Department of Justice is right to say, nope, we're not cooperating with you at all on pending investigations.
Well, how else are they going to be loyal to Trump? Come back, be loyal to the Devil's Advocates and our buddy Jim Santel. More of him, more of you, more of us. Come back.
This was high crimes.
There's a lot of...
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take.
But early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Warning, listening to the Devil's Advocates may expose you to opposing views.
We've mentioned, inflation is going to be an issue. Let me ask you this. What would you like to see Donald Trump do if you were here? What did you suggest Biden do to address the inflationary pressures we're facing right now?
Well, I can't tell you that because that would be something you could counter and defeat Trump with or the Republican Party. So tell you.
You think Trump's taking strategy from you on talk radio, Lou?
I mean, you're no Kid Rock, Lou.
Follow the Devil's Advocates on Facebook and Twitter.
Ready for our little forest adventure?
Yes!
Yeah, I wanna go outside, I wanna be.
We're here.
Whoa, that was fast.
There's a forest closer than you think. Find a park or forest near you and music inspired by nature at discovertheforest.org. Brought to you by USDA Forest Service and the Ad Council.
My Alzheimer's diagnosis was hard to take,
but early detection allowed us to take control of the situation together.
Talk to your family about seeing a doctor. Go to alz.org/time to talk. A message from the Alzheimer's Association and the Ad Council.
Here's your updated forecast on the Shaw. Chance of snow tonight, otherwise overcast skies. Lows dip down to about 27. Northwesterly winds 5 to 10 miles an hour. Snow likely again tomorrow. Highs level off around 30. Cloudy skies expected. Cloudy skies expected again tomorrow night. Lows dip down to about 15. 2 to 4 inches of snow tonight through Saturday. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
Is there anything you can tell me about this investigation? Anything more?
I don't know if you know the Devil's Advocates, but the show is kind of a big deal.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Devil's Advocates radio show. James Santel, host of Morning Cannolis on Saturdays, and former U.S. attorney, sticking around for one more segment. Jim, always appreciate you doing so. Got to throw this one at you, man. You know, being the former U.S. attorney, Charles McGonigal arrested. Cash, what, taking huge cash payments from Russians? And this guy was in charge of, Jim, what is going on, man?
Aside from the fact that I get to say Oleg Deripaska again, which I haven't done in many, many months, I know you enjoy that as well, Dom, and Mike, you do too. This is the kind of thing that you look at and shake your head in abject disbelief. It's not the first time, obviously. We've had counter agents, so to speak, and people embedded, and it's probably not the last, but each time it happens, it is shocking. And as much as it is good fodder for some of the panelists on some of the news shows out there, it's also very serious because, again, not only has he taken an oath to the government to pursue his job, actually, again, taking money, compromising the very person he is investigating. These charges, these statements so far really indicate a huge compromise in the integrity of those investigations, the legitimacy, candidly, of the FBI. And you can, and not generally, but again, you've got an insider who's doing this, and it does give fodder, regrettably, to those people who say, see, the FBI is corrupt itself. And that's not the case, but that's why this is so disastrous. It's also, I know for a fact, it is disastrous internally for Chris Wray and his other supervisors who are looking at this and saying, this is what I do not need. They've known about this for a long time. This just didn't happen overnight. But this is not good for the national security, for the domestic security of our nation through the FBI. It is a huge blot, and that's an understatement at the highest level of the government. And we should be very concerned also about what other compromises may have been made out there. It's the same kind of thing we've talked about before, national security, everything. This undermines that.
Well, and I think that's the case. You know, it's the shock of it is one thing, but then everything this guy touched from day one of his career, you know, were they grooming him? You know, when did that relationship start? How did this thing start? He was in there when the whole Clinton thing was going on, right? Was he guided by some nefarious or, you know, dropped information? I really wonder what kind of audit, you know, investigation, and who leads that? I mean, how many special investigators we got to get to now? What, investigate? You know, the FBI.
Right. It is. And that's the other piece that is certainly going on. Again, Chris Wray's got this problem of public attention, but he also has an obligation to figure out what cases did this fellow touch and what cases indirectly did he touch. Heavy breath here. You need to go back and you need to take a look at those to make certain that justice is done. If there was something that he did in those other cases that compromises, you might think, well, I'm going to say the legitimacy of the prosecution, compromises the rights of defendants to have full discovery, compromises their rights in any way, whether it's plea agreements or trials, and this fellow in some way tainted those prosecutions. And we've had situations like that where you have to go back into court and move to dismiss indictments or move to otherwise get some remedy on those. This has tendrils far beyond, as you just said, Dom, far beyond just this horrific and catastrophic investigation and prosecution.
Well,
open up that other door, and all those things are going on right now at the FBI. What else did he touch? We need to get an assessment of that. Resource intensive, absolutely, at the highest level, once again.
And if he buried evidence, that's the other side of that equation.
Right, right. And how do you find out about that, right? Well, we've got some ways of doing that. But what, again, devoting resources to that part of the inquiry while special agents are not doing other things like investigating healthcare fraud and securities fraud and bank robberies and drug dealing and all those other things. We're eating our own appropriately, but our own are the ones who've sold us out.
Jim Sentell, fine host of Morning Cannolis, former U.S. attorney, friend of ours. How many agents do you think are currently assigned to investigate all the wrongdoings of that George Santos character?
Oh,
I mean,
goodness,
there's criminality,
right?
You know, just flowing out of this guy.
Right. And it just, we're probably, since we've been on the air, there's another story made up about something. Who can keep track of it, all this? So two categories of things that George seems to be lying about generally. There are those things that are plainly not criminal in nature. They may be, again, interesting and dramatic in some ways, and we roll our eyes. There are those things that are related to finances, and there are those things related to campaigns. And that's what your question goes to, Mike, which is those things do have to be followed up on. If there are misstatements in campaign reports, if there are other financial records out there, gosh, who knows what this fellow said to banks to get loans under penalty of perjury. All kinds of things. I think this is one of those cases where, once again, you follow, yes, the lies. Not all of them will lead you to crime. You follow the money also, and those may well be the undermining thing, ultimately, for Mr. Santos. But again, oh my goodness, when will this stop, right? It also makes you wonder how much time and resources we're spending on this character, who should be nowhere near the United States Congress, and probably should be on the target. He should be a target on a file somewhere of a criminal investigation.
Well, he is. Unfortunately, it's in Brazil, and they could soon file charges because this man was effectively fleeing prosecution in South America, but now they know where he's at. He's in the U.S. Congress. Jim, what is the likelihood, if it's effectively petty theft, a fraud, a checkbook fraud charge, that a U.S. congressman sitting gets extradited to a foreign country to answer the charges? I think slim and none, but you tell me, sir.
Yeah, I think that's probably the case because of the nature of this. I mean, if we're talking perhaps homicide, sexual assault, probably so. We have things, I'm sure we've got them with that country as well, called mutual legal assistance treaties. It's called MLATs is the acronym for them. They basically say if we've got people here who have committed crimes in Italy or other places, that we've got, not reciprocity completely, but we will cooperate with you. But for the most part, those MLATs, those legal assistance treaties, contemplate are giving up people under very serious circumstances. Checks, fleeing, probably not in that category. I don't know what the MLAT says with respect to that country, but unlikely, I guess, that he will face justice there. They can keep that open, however, as long as he's a young man, yet you never know where he may travel down the road.
Just send Dog the Bounty Hunter after him, Jim.
You know, we walked into Trump's inauguration with Dog the Bounty Hunter. We've got personal relations with the man.
all kinds of options out there for rendition, I guess is the word, right? And private citizens should not be doing that, of course. But there are all kinds of things that could happen to him down the road. One never knows.
Jim Sentell, host of Morning Cannolis. Jim, I've said this to you recently. You're such a gracious man. if your words won't say what bastards they are, let your tone do it. Or let the devil's advocates do it for you. Thanks for coming
around. We'll let you do that, at least today. At least today. Great to be with you, gentlemen, once again, anytime. I suspect we'll be talking again soon about that top of the show issue.
Well, I hope the indictments come down between now and Saturday so you can cover them all on the Morning Cannolis 9 to 11 Civic Media Network. We got a happier happy hour coming back. Jim, we say goodbye to you. Farewell. Leave the cannolis. Take the cannolis. Damn it.
Leave the gun. Thanks, Jim.
Leave the gun. Take the cannolis.
Hey, this is Matt from Design Garden. Remember when the internet was new? Back then, you had to leave your house to start a business. Companies used to pay programmers bags of cash to get online. Now, small businesses can get online with a Facebook business page, or Squarespace, or Google My Business, or WordPress? But which tools should you use? Can you afford to go down the wrong path? Design Garden uses modern tools to build your website the right way. Find us online at design.garden. Again, that's design.garden.
You are listening to your local Civic Media radio station on air. Thank you. Did you know we are always streaming on TuneIn and the Civic Media app too? And if you miss a show or game, find it wherever you get your podcasts or on our website, civicmedia.us.
MyShiro always goes the extra mile, stretches every dollar, puts others first. But now it's your time, Mom. Get free tips to help boost your retirement savings now at aceyourretirement.org.
Brought to you by AARP and the Ad Council.
You are listening to WAUK 540 AM Jackson, W266 DR Waukesha, always streaming on the Civic Media app.